Welcome to our first mini episode of Narrative for Social Justice. My name is Angela Du, she, her, and we are here today to dish about the chair. So I'll have everyone on this call with me quickly say their names.
I am Dorsha Hushal.
I'm Chiara Pellegrini.
I'm Gretchen Busel.
So for those of you who have not watched The Chair yet, it's about a newly minted chair. Joo-yoon Kim is our protagonist of an English department at a lower tier Ivy called Pembroke University. She's the first woman of the department to have this position. And she's navigating things like budget cuts and trying to secure tenure for a dazzling new young hire who is a Black professor, a relationship with a friend and colleague and more than friend, Bill Dobson, and, you know, David Duchovny, and also this hilarious but very difficult child, Juju, as she's referred to throughout the series.
One of the central themes as well is a sort of clash between what are perceived to be old ways of being a professor and what are new ways of being a professor. So there's a generational clash at the center of most of the series, I would say.
The generational clash also manifests in the subplot where Bill is being, his class is being memed and portrayed out of context by the students. One of the issues is also its depiction of the generational clash in a way where it sort of leans too heavily on the middle generation, if I can call it so. Like there are the older professors who are constantly depicted as funny and sort of funny in a way that they don't want to be funny. And, you know, their methods are constantly questioned. Similarly, students, whether interest in a professor's class or portrayal of a certain culture or student activism, even that is portrayed as misguided. So then we are kind of directed and sort of heavily directed to lean on the ethical and political compasses of the people in the middle who are the somewhat younger professors. Joo-yoon is said to be in her, you know, 40s and so on. And that is the ethical political compass that Chair seems to direct us toward. The discourse on Twitter has been going from excited to, is this real? Does this happen? To various defenses of the show. So I think on Twitter, initially, of course, the conversation was not only about the fact that, oh, here is Academia, but also that the protagonist of a show on Academia was a woman of color, and potentially the show would, depict how people from various marginalized positions navigate academia. And I think the early reviews of the show also sort of highlighted, emphasized that point a lot. And then when the show came out, I think the conversation, at least maybe because I'm on Academy Twitter, that's the other thing, right? Like, I don't know if all of Twitter is talking about the chair, but the people I follow are talking about the chair because they're all academics. So the conversation then shifted to, people would take screenshots or something of the chair and say, yeah, can you spot, like, you know, do you see something familiar here? What is familiar here? And then people would be like, oh, the number of white men in the room, or like the panels or whatever, the wooden desks and so on. So the conversation shifted to, is this real? How representative it is? And then from there on,
I mean, I think I knew that, like, people would talk about, is this realistic? Is this not? I felt like that was a little bit beside the point. I didn't really feel like the point necessarily was to have something that was, you know, a mirror or a perfect reflection. Even though I say that, I will be hypocritical for one moment and say that I felt like the wooden furniture was far too nice. Like, there was like a lot of mahogany and, you know, worn tones.
I think that's limited to those, to some of those IVs that many of us have not yet experienced. I agree that I'm not really sure where the conversation outside of academic Twitter or academic social media, like on a broader scale, is, simply because I am an academic. And so therefore, most of my social media is very weighted heavily towards other academics as well. So I'm only really seeing those who I know in that sphere, who operate in this sphere the chair is supposed to depict, commenting on it. And I'm seeing sort of three camps. And one is, I've watched it and loved it. And then I've watched it and I've hated it, because it doesn't really represent what we do, who we are. And particularly, it's quite simplistic about the most complicated notions of what we are here to do. And then there's the I won't watch it, either because I like to consume media for fun and not for work, and it feels like work to watch a show about academia, or folks who've already read enough reviews or heard enough on academic Twitter to be turned off by what it seems to represent. I fall into the I haven't watched it yet. I remain open to whether or not I really will. But what I am most engaged by is actually the narrative that surrounds the show, not whatever's actually happening in it. The public discourse about it, and the idea of whether or not it's supposed to represent what we really do, I think for me is the crux of the question. Really, that boils down to, who is the show for? Is it for us? Is it for those of us who already live in the world of the chair? Or is it for people outside the world of the chair, right?
Gretchen, you raise a really good point in terms of who is this show for, because, you know, I would say I mostly liked the show. One of the things that interested me about it is the fact that depictions of academia as things stand are usually so far off into the imagination that is like, has this person actually ever talked to someone who is in this world? And there's usually like some kind of professor at the front of the class talking about the meaning of life and the students being really mesmerized. I was very excited at the idea that people not in academia might get a little glimpse of what's going on. At the same time, I don't really think that anyone outside of academia is watching it, apart from the people who have reviewed it. The question of relatability as well, I think I'm still interested in it. And I agree that to an extent is beside the point, in the sense that I don't think the show necessarily aims to be the most realistic depiction of anything. And perhaps it is the fact that I'm my context is the UK. And so I never expected it to be like an exact depiction of my day-to-day life. And so maybe that allowed me to experience it in a way that I was prepared that it wouldn't feel the most realistic, but still there were many things that I thought, oh, okay, to the extent that people I know couldn't watch it because it felt too real, which also makes you think that it is expected to function as escapism.
Broadly, I've been hearing, as Kira kind of said, some people who are saying this is so real that I can't watch, it's completely triggering, and others who are saying this is completely absurdist. And again, I'm talking from the perspective of academics. But one thing that like I just have to praise the show for is Sandra Oh's performance. It's just so great in this. I thought it was really important to show an Asian American professor as a person of color navigating the academy. And in particular, like the ways that she's made minor by her colleague is a kind of thing that a lot of Asian North Americans face. Shout out to episode 3, please listen to it. One of the minor feelings that I think that she's asked to grapple with is that she's kind of asked to empathize with everybody. That kind of racial empathy is a way of erasing yourself, so that you're always seeing something from someone else's perspective. And in that way, you often lose where you stand. I mean, there's like a really great moment where these students come in and they're saying, we want Yaz McKay to be tenured, and she'd be the first Black professor in the department with tenure. And they're kind of saying, you know, this is what happens to Black professors. They do not get invited to their colleagues' houses. They are asked to do this. They are seen as less collegial. And she's sort of like, yes, I know, I know, I know. And so that's actually a great moment where she's displaying that kind of empathy.
Just because of Sandra Oh, you know, and her sort of connection with Grey's Anatomy, I was also thinking a great deal about, you know, when academics are complaining, this is not real or this is real, I was thinking, are our standards of realism, or what do we think of realism in the narrative context, different when it is academia versus something else on television? So what promise has this show made in terms of realism and representation that we are constantly talking about or grappling with? When academics are saying, I won't watch it, do doctors not watch Grey's Anatomy?
That's exactly what, you know, I was thinking earlier. I raised the question, you know, like, is our reality, is our academic reality supposed to be fodder for escapism? And to the idea of us academics in our ivory towers being so offended that, you know, this is not realistic and that it's representing something purely for the sake of the audience, and what like dramatic tropes can we pull out of academia to match with fictional narrative tropes that already exist that people are so inured to, so attracted to. And then people have been doing this to doctors for decades, and then firefighters, and, you know, so many different workplace, you know, environments get drawn into the dramatic sphere, and I would say exploited in talking about academia, right? Because that's where I live, you know. But it really does bring up this idea I've seen repeated over and over again, the phrase, the chair is not a documentary. The chair is not a documentary. And so to me, it just, it makes me wonder, like, what is the ethical responsibility of a fictional narrative, right? To represent any different sort of rhetorical context that fiction enters to, does it have an ethical responsibility to represent it in a certain way or not? Is there an ethical responsibility for people who are familiar? Do we need consultants? I know there is a Harvard PhD consultant on the chair, right? To try to give it some sort of authenticity. What is the necessity or the desire for authenticity? And am I only upset about the notion of it because it's trying to steal some of, you know, my world, right?
On the question of authenticity, and one thing that I thought was really good at capturing the spirit of something, if not the fact of something, was that person that you mentioned, Gretchen, Annie Julia Wyman. She's someone who got her who wrote her dissertation at Harvard University, and short on comedy. And I thought that the show was good at instilling these comedic beats in very tense and like sometimes horrifying moments. The person who played the Melville scholar, Bob Balaban, there's one moment where the chair's kind of confronting him and saying, look, you've got to put in a good review for Yaz. We want her tenured. And he's throwing his coat and it kind of misses a hanger. And so those moments like that, I mean, it's funny in a way that Kafka is funny, where it's like soul crushing and such, but it makes you laugh. And it really tapped into something in my experience as a PhD student, where sometimes you're talking with a group of friends about something that hurt you so much, but it's so absurd in the, like in the way that it's set up, that you can't help but laugh at your own situation. I think that this kind of complicates the question of realism, because it's something like, when an unreality is your reality, and how do you convey that to somebody else?
I think that's the question of how do you convey something that comes across as unreal, but is your reality. I think that applies to the whole, you know, Bill plot, I guess, and not the part where students are opposing him and so on, but really him as a character. We start off the show, and, you know, one of the first shots we see of him is sort of, I think, cross-cut with Sandra Oh giving her initial speech about all that she hopes for the department to do and the kind of social responsibility that the English department inculcates, or something like that. Like, she's talking about these higher ideals, and he's peeing in the parking lot, I remember, and in the opening scene of the show. And so it is absurd, and it's set up to be absurd. But I think for me, where the chair stops working as a show is I feel it sets up some of these things, but then loses some of the self-reflexivity of it. So, you know, there are points in the show where it seems like we are supposed to take Bill's troubles seriously, even though the show has kind of, you know, initiated us into taking Bill as this really absurd character. And why we are supposed to take him seriously is because Sandra's character, who is sort of, you know, the focalizer, so to speak, of the show, she is taking him seriously. She is sort of hoping that he will get his life together, and she, you know, he's her romantic interest as well.
I agree with you, Torsha, that the character of Bill was really difficult for me to wrap my head around. I'm very puzzled about the way that I think the show is trying to make him sympathetic, as you said, because Sandra Oh's character is the vocalizer. And I don't know whether I think it's really gutsy or really misguided to try and make this character sympathetic. And I haven't landed on whether I admire the show for the complexity, or I think it has fallen short in some way. And I also think that, back on what Gretchen was saying in terms of the fictional tropes that the show is adhering to, I wonder to what extent the idea of creating an ensemble cast is playing a part in how the show is structured. So the ending, for example, the idea that everyone stays where they are, I wonder to what extent they were gesturing towards a potential multiple season thing where, you know, we get attached to the characters and we see them as they go along different seasons, and, you know, we learn the quirks. And I wonder if Bill is meant to be inserted in this landscape as a sort of, I don't know, Michael Scott in The Office that you initially hate, but then, you know, becomes part of the family.
I think that also brings us to the question of the narrative structure of shows on Netflix and the narrative template and sort of what they deliver as narratives. Do they deliver as closure? I mean, there is a lot of narrative research, of course, on the idea of seriality, but I think Netflix, especially season one of shows on Netflix, are this sometimes very interesting structural creatures, because it's like the showrunners want you to have a complete show just in case it's not ordered for a second season, or even the actors sometimes will not sign up on a show that is multi-season. So there is kind of this mini closure of sorts, but also there are all these openings. And so if we look at the narrative structure, it is deeply flawed, but in a way we have been maybe exposed to enough Netflix to accept such deeply flawed narrative structures. Because that is the thing about Chair. The Chair works in, you know, for the lack of a better word, like gags, like, you know, particular moments, particular scenes, or, you know, sections of episodes work as units. But its flaws become more and more exposed when you look at the show as an entire arc, or, you know, where it is going with particular characters or their development and so on.
It is a really interesting question to think about whether this is six episodes of exposition for what would follow, and some of the critique about the complexities, the things that are missing, would be a part of a more developed series that happens over time, over a more traditional series of 18 or 20 some episodes. Six episodes, it's hard to do. It's hard to really even set the scene of an atmosphere which is as sort of layered and complex, especially when you think about power dynamics as academia is. I think most of the critique that I'm seeing is saying it acknowledges that there is a power structure, that there is a hierarchy in academia. It starts to suggest that we have a very serious labor issue, but neither of those are really explored in depth. And it, for me, becomes the question of, like I said earlier, who's really the audience here? We live in this environment, we expect those to be explored, a more public, a broader audience outside of academia. But is that the job of a show on Netflix, to educate about the labor issues and the power dynamics that we have and the historic reasons for where these labor issues come from? And we kind of, how do you blend that with pratfalls and kind of meta jokes in just a six season series. It's too difficult for that. So some of those critiques, their expectations may be too high for what's possible to do in what people expect from next Netflix series of this size. Yeah.
Aesthetically, my critique of that structure, of course, is how heavily it leans on existing cultural narratives to make sense of all these ideas that have been thrown at us in a way. I think our conversation is kind of coming a full circle here. We started off by discussing, why are people talking about realism and what expectations of realism people have from the show? The reason people are talking about realism and representation might just be because the show wants you to do that, because that's the only way the show will come across as, having to say something, because in and of itself, the text is not just incomplete, it's not fully developed. Like all the strands it has not explored them to the fullest. So it is leaning on Twitter discourse to remain in the public mind, the consciousness, and so on.
Yeah, and to pick up on something that you said, Torsha, it is picking up on cultural narratives that we already have in our heads. And one of them that I thought was intriguing and is an undeveloped strand, as we've been talking about, is this kind of idea of the academics messy home life. And I thought that it was doing both conventional and unconventional moves with this. I mean, one thing that I liked about the portrayal of Ji-Yoon Kim's home life is that even as it sets us up into this very familiar overworked narrative of the female academic as being accompanied by a broken or messy or chaotic home life, it also kind of undermines that by showing that her family life is still a successful one, even if it's an alternative to what she proposed to herself or what we expect to work. I mean, one thing that's so great about watching Joo-hee, the adopted daughter, is that the way that she speaks and the way that she moves makes it clear that she feels like she belongs to wherever she is, whether it's at her grandfather's house or in her own home. And when she's at the scene with her cousin's choosing of the future kind of moment, she's also utterly comfortable there, even though she is not a Korean person herself.
I think especially in that cousin's future choosing ceremony, she is a good foil to Bill, that in theory, both of them are not Korean ethnically, but she is much more comfortable. She understands their ceremony. She is excited about the ceremony and she's part of the ceremony. And Bill, on the other hand, just resorts to drinking with the men. And that is the extent to which he is sort of willing to understand the culture and willing to participate in the situation where he has landed. And then he is making his aggressive move of imposing what he thinks this should be about.
One really excellent, I think, self-reflexive move is that even as Bill criticizes David Duchovny, he is, of course, being compared to David Duchovny as a 60s style male white professor who is resting on his laurels and is oblivious to the work of other people around him. So it's a thing that he misses, but as the audience, maybe we get.
But again, that's a leaning on cultural narrative thing that Cher does, because for me, David Duchovny did not ring a bell, because I have grown up in a completely different context. And so for me, it was like, okay, I understand there is an inside joke here, which is very different from, say, a show, another show, which was a lockdown hit, right? Call My Agent, which also has all these kinds of celebrity cameos. And over there too, I guess there are inside jokes, but the narrative that is presented to us is successful enough and sort of tied up enough for one to not have to know everything about the celebrity to understand the work that this cameo is doing.
That's one of the things that I didn't quite understand, again, not being familiar with an American system, is this idea that you would invite a celebrity to give, I guess, a guest lecture, and then they would become a professor. Is that a thing?
I believe that Matthew McConaughey is currently doing a gig at UT Austin. So yes, it's definitely a thing. Okay, I have a question for all of you because you have seen it and I have not. I do want to ask you, because you brought it up earlier, the idea of relying on the middle zone, right? Because I do occupy the middle zone. That's the exact space that I occupy because I am tenured. I was assistant chair of our department. I have aspirations for administration. I'm being groomed for administration. So those folks who say things like, I don't want to watch the chair because it's going to make me afraid to be in that middle zone, because that is where where many of the administrators occupy, right? You are a mentor to your junior colleagues, but you have to navigate the respect that your senior colleagues are due. So should I watch the show?
At least in season one, I don't think issues reach the level of nuance where you will have something to learn. Or again, I think it may be a positionality thing as well. Like for me, as a woman of color who is an assistant professor, in many respects, the situation that, you know, a Yaz or a lot of, you know, comments that Ji-Yoon faces, these sorts of things have happened to me. And so for me, it was not a moment of learning, but I did hope that these would be picked up and taken more seriously than they were. So, you know, just to give you an example, when I entered the university as an assistant professor, they were doing my faculty profile page or something, and there was a photo shoot. And for some reason, I think they were taking photos of all professors, I think even senior professors. And there was a professor from a different department who was waiting in line while my photo was being taken. And again, I was not smiling a lot. I was just like, you know, a very neutral face, I guess. And from behind the camera, he makes this strange accent and says, Indian brides never smile. So, you know, so chair is not really my learning experience because I'm learning from life, you know. I don't know who chair is directed at. I didn't feel it was directed at someone like me who would expect more nuance and more reckoning and more self-reflexivity about the show overall. I would expect a little more nuance in handling subjects that are so complicated, the microaggressions that we face every day and so on.
Yeah, I tend to agree that it never occurred to me that this would be a show that we can learn from. It's a simplification, obviously. And I've always taken it as one. I think a better simplification than I've seen anywhere else, perhaps. But still not something that would teach us who are positioned in a certain way in a very complex academic environment and also are doing this podcast and are part of this Narrative for Social Justice initiative. I don't think it's going to teach us anything new. I think what will be of interest perhaps is how this world is depicted in narrative. One of the things that I was thinking about as well in terms of who might find the show more or less relatable, more or less difficult to watch, and that position of the middle. I guess something that we haven't mentioned, but it is very blatant, is there is an absence of kind of precarious workers, PhD students and adjuncts. And I wonder if that world had been depicted a bit with a bit more focus, if I would have found the show more difficult to watch, or if I would have become more invested in it and been angry that it wasn't portrayed. Okay, so I wonder if some distance from the types of perspectives that are being portrayed is also part of people's reactions to it, some distance or lack of distance.
It makes me honestly very worried, the folks who say this is so realistic, because I wonder what relationship they have to contingent laborers, right? There has to be a massive disconnect for them to think that representation is realistic when it absolutely elides the gutting, right, you know, of permanent positions and the fact that all of academia, you know, operates on the backs of contingent laborers, whether it be graduate students or adjuncts.
as a graduate student, I'm looking at how heavily the single graduate student of the show is relied on to account for her department's actions and finding that completely unrealistic, of course. But in terms of whether or not to watch the show, apart from that issue, I mean, I think that Gretchen, it's useful as we've all already been talking about it as a form of public discourse. I remember going to my first conference years and years ago and Downton Abbey being mentioned a lot at that time. It was when I kind of realized that there are these official rules that depending on which academic society you go into, it seems like you are, there are certain required reading to be able to talk to people. And so whether or not people watch this, they will probably have an opinion on it. And that's kind of like a way to meet people in terms of how they related to the show. Our students as well will, whether we like it or not, watch the show and have an idea of whether it represents them, whether it represents us, whether it represents the administration and so on. It may be a chance to have a deeper conversation with them about what academia is like.
Thank you, Angela. And thank you to our listeners for tuning in to this mini episode of Narrative for Social Justice podcast. We have 5 other episodes. Please check them out on Anchor, Spotify. Our episodes cover a wide range of topics, including narratives of Asian American and Asian Canadian representation, narratives of space from the Iberian Peninsula, race, social justice, pedagogy, and narratives of the past. You can follow us on Twitter at Narrative4SJ. You can also write to us at narrative4sj@gmail.com. And our Facebook page is called Narrative for Social Justice. Thank you for listening to us today. Thank you.